Good morning. Wonderful to be speaking with you this morning. Will you pray with me? Father, open your word up to us and please open us up to your word. Amen. Have you noticed how leadership and positions of authority go together with service in our culture? We use the term public servants, and that group of occupations, public servants, includes roles of significant authority, like the Director General of Health, for instance. He is a public servant. And the political leaders of our nation are called ministers, which is just a word that means servants. The top political leader, the head of our parliament, is called the Prime Minister, which just means the first servant. I meet each week with James O'Connell, who runs a hospitality coaching business, and he's often remarked to me that servant leadership is one of the main ideas in the business world. He tells me that phrases like, your team doesn't work for you, you work for your team, that's just standard fare from the most successful business leaders. And you see the same idea of servant leadership being championed in schools as an important value for our children to learn. And this all seems very normal to us, even obvious. But in many places and at many times, it has not been at all obvious. If you spoke about servant leadership to a Roman or a Greek 2,000 years ago, they would have thought you were crazy. And if you speak about people in authority being servants, if you said that to many in cultures where there are caste systems even today, they would think that you are trying to upset the natural order of things. See, what seems totally normal to us is not normal to all people. So why does this idea of servant leadership seem so normal, so obvious to us? Well, we see why in the things that Jesus says in this passage in Mark's Gospel that we just heard. But we'll perhaps also see how much deeper this goes than we usually take it. And we're going to look at this passage in three parts today. Strange service, seeking greatness, and serving greatness. Please do have Mark's Gospel open to chapter 10, and let's get into it. First of all, strange service from verses 32, 34, and verse 45. Now, verse 32 of Mark chapter 10 brings us onto the road, on the road to Jerusalem, with a group of people, and out leading the way, out in front, is Jesus. And we hear him telling the 12, who are the specially chosen group of disciples who would become his authoritative witnesses, we hear him telling them about something that was going to happen to him. So look with me from verse 33. We are going up to Jerusalem, he said, and the Son of Man will be delivered over to the chief priests and the teachers of the law. They will condemn him to death and will hand him over to the Gentiles, who will mock him and spit on him, flog him and kill him. 3 days later, he will rise. That is a prediction of Jesus' coming death. But in fact, it is the most detailed and graphic prediction of his death in all of the Gospels. You can almost see it as he describes it. This horrid spectacle of him being spat on and mocked and flogged before he's hung on the cross to die an excruciating and humiliating death. And did you notice where he says this is going to happen? The start of verse 33. In Jerusalem. And that is exactly where he is leading these people to. No wonder his disciples were astonished and the others with them were afraid. He was leading them towards this. It is very strange and disturbing. It's like he's hurling himself in front of a moving car as they look on. Why is he doing this? We find out at the end of the passage, all the way down in verse 45. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many, Jesus says. See, Jesus is doing this to serve. The Son of Man, that's Jesus' way of speaking about himself, came to serve, he says. And this is how he will serve, by giving his life as a ransom for many. A ransom, a payment that sets someone free. It seems a strange kind of service to give his life for that, until you realize that you need it. You see, if Jesus was simply hurling himself in front of a moving car, it would be strange and it would be a tragedy. It would be so sad. But what if he was hurling himself in front of that car so that he could push you out of the way? What if the ransom that he was paying by heading to Jerusalem to die this horrid death, what if that ransom was to set you free, you and me? And in fact, as we read the whole of Mark's gospel, we see that is exactly what Jesus was doing. He only paid this ransom because we need to be freed. He only died this death so that we would not have to face eternal death as people who have rebelled against God and who have failed to live as our Creator calls us to live. This is indeed a strange service, but it is a necessary service for us. And there has been no death in history that has had more of an impact on the world or done more to transform people than this strange servant death of Jesus. This death that we still remember every Easter on Good Friday. And this death which still echoes down into our culture in concepts like servant leadership. At the very least, this strange, important death deserves to be investigated. At the very least, the strangeness and the importance of it should motivate you to investigate it further, to find out more. Can I urge you, if you haven't really ever looked into the death of Jesus and what it means according to him and according to his original followers, can I urge you to look further into it? We at Trinity would love to help you do that in any way we can. Can I just urge you to do that? This death of Jesus is a strange service, but it's an absolutely necessary one for all of us. And all of that makes what comes next very, very awkward. Seeking greatness, verses 35 to 40. See, straight after this detailed and somber prediction from Jesus, Mark tells us that two of Jesus' disciples, two brothers, they come and speak to him from verse 35. Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him. Teacher, they said, we want you to do for us whatever we ask. That's an interesting request. If my kids said that to me, I would be immediately on alert. And Jesus understandably asks for clarification. What do you want me to do for you? And then the request comes, verse 37. They replied, let one of us sit at your right and the other at your left in your glory. Ugh. That's the sort of thing that makes you want to avert your eyes with embarrassment. It's like someone has just told them of a terminal diagnosis and their first response is, oh, can I have your golf clubs then, seeing as you won't be needing them? It's just so awkward. Yet, if we look past the social boneheadedness of it, of what they say here, what is it they're actually asking for? Well, they're asking Jesus for positions of authority at his right and his left. Positions of power, esteem. They're seeking greatness. And that is actually the most natural thing in the world to do. Because the strong survive. So we need to be strong. A leader's lead. And so you need to show yourself to be a leader. Put yourself forward. You need to take the initiative. Get ahead. If you don't put yourself forward, no one else is going to. And even those who aren't the great and the powerful in our world, perhaps even the oppressed, when they understandably seek to redress power imbalances, and well, how do they redress that? Well, they do it by taking power, by seeking those positions of greatness. So you just get different people into the same positions of greatness and power and authority. Our only antidote to power is power. Seeking greatness is actually very natural to us. So perhaps if we're disturbed by James and John here, we'd be wise to see that we are more like them than we often realize. And while I don't have time to go into all the details of Jesus' response to them, when they ask this this request, the seeking power, the seeking greatness, he basically says, yes, but no. In summary, he asks if they can drink the cup and share the baptism that he's about to undergo. And both the cup and the baptism are used here as images of his suffering and death. And they say, in another moment of rich boneheadedness, they say, sure we can. Yeah, we can do that. And so he replies, you will. You will, in a sense, share my suffering. But, he says, it's not mine to grant who will sit at my right and my left. So, the moral of the story for us is, we'd best be careful what we ask for, because we might just get some of it. So there's James and John seeking greatness. Now we move to serving greatness. Serving greatness. It begins in verse 41 with the other 10 disciples being indignant with James and John. And you might hope that they were upset for Jesus' sake, because James and John had been so insensitive towards Jesus. But unfortunately, from Jesus' response, we seem to see that's not the case. Rather, the 10 were annoyed because James and John got in first and they pushed ahead in front of the line for greatness. So in verse 42, Jesus calls them all together. And his teaching here is absolutely revolutionary. It is culture changing, literally. It has changed our culture. Let's listen to his words again. First of all, from verse 42. You know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Now, the way that Jesus describes the rulers and the authorities here is perfectly natural. Lording over others was precisely what lords were expected to do. That's why they were lords. That's what it was expected in the Greco-Roman world, the Gentile world of that time. Commentator Craig Evans says this: greatness in Jesus' day was defined as power, coercive power. The more power one had, the greater one was. Again, that's perfectly natural in one sense. The strong naturally rule over the weak. The only reason it seems in any way wrong to us is because of the huge influence of the message of Christ, the message of Jesus, the very message in this passage, the huge influence that's had on us through 2,000 years. I listened to a podcast with Tom Holland this week. He's not a Christian, as far as I can work out, but he is a very, very perceptive historian. And he talked about how things like humility and the idea of people in authority as servants, how those things would have been utterly odd to Greek and Roman hearers. And he noted that even in since then, in our culture, in the Western culture, some people have been able to step back far enough to see how odd this is. One of them was the great German philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche. And Nietzsche, he hated Christianity precisely because it influenced our culture so much towards favoring the weak instead of the strong. He called it the slave's religion because Christianity pushed the West to favor the weak instead of the strong. Now, if that's all a bit geeky for you, fair enough. But the point is this. What Jesus says about service is only normal to us because of the influence Jesus has had on our culture for so long. But of course, that means the danger for us is that it's too familiar. See, the danger for something that seems natural to us is that we might pass over it without really thinking about it or really understanding it deeply enough. Familiarity breeds contempt, but it can also breed apathy or just missing the point. That's the case for the radical idea of service for all of us in the West, this radical idea from Jesus. But I think it's even more so for those of us who are Christians, because we're really used to the sort of thing Jesus says here about serving and those who are in authority serving and that we must serve one another. But if we take what he says seriously, this passage is actually much more radical than most of us are comfortable with. See, in verse 43, Jesus says, "Not so with you." He says, "You don't use your authority or your greatness like they do out there. You don't use it to lord it over others." He says, "Rather, the great in his kingdom will make themselves servants." In verse 44, "The first in his kingdom will make themselves slaves of all." Now that is strong language. Servants and slaves. Greatness in Jesus' kingdom is about service of others and making yourself a slave of them. Being first in the kingdom, being the first place in authority, it's about giving up your rights like a slave for others. This is confronting. I find it confronting. But we can't get around it. In particular, we can't get around it because of verse 45. That little word there at the beginning of verse 45, "for." It is so important. We are servants and slaves for, because Jesus was. He served us in the utmost way. He died a slave's death. And that's one of the things that crucifixion was often called in the ancient world. It was often called a slave's death because it was so degrading and painful. It was considered more fitting for slaves than for people of a higher order. So Jesus died a slave's death to serve us. Therefore, we serve others rather than lord it over them. Here's an example of that. Mike Ovey. He was the principal of Oak Hill Theological College in England until his death a couple of years ago. Our own David Thompson studied under Mike. Shortly after Mike Ovey died, I read an article by a former student, and he spoke of one Christmas day when both the student and his wife were sick, and Mike Ovey offered to watch their kids for them on Christmas Day. Now, the student's wife said she just couldn't believe these words, this offer, was coming from the principal of the Bible college. But that sort of self-lowering, humble service is precisely the sort of thing we should see from someone in authority who follows Jesus. But it's not only leaders who can show this sort of attitude. Jesus is talking primarily about leadership and authority and greatness here because of what James and John and the other disciples were seeking. They were seeking greatness, so he's speaking mainly about that. But this attitude of service can be shown by all of us, making ourselves servants of others. And so some of you will have heard me mention a man in a church that I used to go to. He was getting older, this man. He was living alone. I think he'd always lived alone. He was constantly applying for jobs, but he was constantly getting knocked back. He never got one in all the years I knew him. But every week, he quietly but enthusiastically set up for church. He cleaned up and swept up afterwards. He served. And my eldest daughter, Esther, I was talking to her this week, she can remember how much she liked to get to church early because this man would let her help set up for communion and let her help set things up. And that was special to a little girl. And I'm sure it would have been much quicker and easier to set up without a three-year-old helping you. But even with the little bit of authority, the little bit of power he had, that precious man served others. And you can bet that with both Mike Ovey and that man at my old church, the reason they served others, the reason they did it in that radical way, was captured in verse 45. Because the Son of Man, Jesus, was their example. And not only their example, but actually he was the one who, as the greatest of all, had lowered himself for them, to serve them, to make himself a slave for them, dying a slave's death. He'd done it all for them and they knew it. And Jesus did that for you and for me as well. So may he help us to serve others as he has served us. Amen.